ART Lexington has been working on Lost Great Gildersleeves and Retribution. Here's Operation Perjury from Retribution.
American Radio Theater brings you another thrilling tale of those who tempt the fates.
Any mortal who commits an act of wrong, no matter how clever the scheme, no matter how handsome the gain, may be certain of one thing.
Retribution.
Retribution. Unavoidable, inevitable, yet there are always some who invite its tragic call. Do you? Tonight, we present the tale of still another mortal who thought he could cheat the fates and avoid just payment for his crime, but who made his acquaintance with retribution. It's a story we call Operation Perjury. Can crime as a means ever be justified by any end? Man's desires spark his being. Man lives for those things which he wants. Most human effort is the result of some desire. Most humans achieve those desires by legitimate means. However, there are those among us whose desires are so strong and so selfish that they'll stoop to any depth to achieve them. In the annals of human behavior, many have held the belief that their wishes justified almost any efforts they might pursue to achieve the desired end. However, none was ever more certain that a crime was justified by the end its commission would achieve than John Hartford and Evelyn Wentley. You see, John and Evelyn were in love. But there was, however, an insurmountable barrier to their love, a barrier in the form of Albert Wentley, Evelyn's husband.
Albert, it seems all the conversation we ever have anymore centers around Albert.
Well, I guess he is the single most important element in our lives, isn't he, darling?
He's certainly the greatest menace.
Well, I'm sorry I have to be so cautious and that I have to continually mention Albert, but, well, you know how he is, and we've just got to be aware of him.
I think that's the only thing I dislike about you, Evelyn.
What's that?
In all other respects, you're utterly charming and intelligent. Yet you did marry him. Why?
Oh, John, we've been all over that. I've told you. I was lonely when I met Albert. I mistook the pleasure I found in his company for love. Well, it wasn't long after our marriage that I found out how wrong I was, that I didn't love him.
Then why? Why won't you ask him for a divorce?
I will. I will, but
You've been saying that for months, yet you never go ahead and do it.
I know, but I just have to wait for the right time.
Is there ever going to be a right time?
To break a man's heart? No, I suppose not.
Then what are you waiting for?
Courage, I guess. The courage I'll need to tell him.
And how much longer is it going to take to work up this courage?
I don't know, John. I try. Honestly, I do. I get ready and I think I'm all set to ask him and then, I don't know, the time comes and I get scared.
Scared of him? Well, he's a milquetoast.
Oh, I know that.
You've got to face it, Evelyn. You say you love me. You certainly act as though you do.
Oh, you know perfectly well that there's no question
about
that.
Then you will be able to find the courage necessary to tell him.
The courage to tell him. The courage Evelyn lacked. Too bad. It would have been so simple then. Certainly Albert would have suffered extreme shock at the knowledge that Evelyn didn't love him. But Albert was a simple man. He'd have acquiesced without a scene. He'd have been heartbroken, but he'd have granted Evelyn a divorce if she'd asked for it, told him simply that she didn't love him. But before she got around to asking, Albert made a discovery. A discovery that would alter his attitude toward granting her a divorce. Yes, Albert made a discovery. He learned the true relationship between his wife and John Hartford. And this knowledge changed his whole attitude.
Is that you, Albert?
Yeah, there's a joke about that. I think I'm supposed to say, who did you expect? Maybe that isn't the joke.
I'm not in the mood for comedy, Albert. Please come in and sit down. I need to talk to you.
I can't wait until after dinner. I'm starved.
No, it definitely cannot wait until after dinner.
Well, it must be momentous.
It is.
Very well, I'm seated. What is it?
I want a divorce.
Do you, my dear?
Well, Albert, I must say you don't seem very surprised.
No, I'm not. I'm not surprised at all, Evelyn.
Well?
Well, what?
Will you give it to me?
Why do you want a divorce, Evelyn?
I don't love you anymore.
And that's the only reason?
Yes, that's the only reason.
So you decided to lie about it too, huh, darling?
Lie?
I mean, the real reason, it wouldn't be John Hartford.
Why should John Hartford have anything to do with it?
I know all about you and John, darling.
You know about...
Yes, everything. So it isn't so much that you don't love me as it is that you do love John. Isn't that nearer the truth, Evelyn?
Well, I suppose it is. Yes, I do love him. And I never loved you. I can't help it. I just don't. And now you know.
Yes. Now I know.
So will you give me a divorce?
Never.
What?
I could have understood you falling out of love with me. As a matter of fact, I could even have forgiven that, or at least excused it, had you come to me long ago, before you and John conspired to cheat me. I would have granted you a divorce. Now? Such a thing is the furthest thing from my intention. I don't intend contributing the slightest move toward the happiness you and John hope for.
Why, Albert, you can't mean you intend trying to hold me as your wife when you know how I feel.
My dear, I'm not nearly so interested in holding you as my wife as I am in denying you to John Hartford.
The trouble with Evelyn was her timing was off. She waited until Albert was aware of her true reason before asking him for a divorce. Had she asked him before, he'd have granted it. Now he had no idea of being generous. Now he'd die before he'd contribute to what happiness Evelyn and John might find together.
So he refused.
Yes. Well, he knows we love each other. There's no question about that.
Well, what do you intend doing about it?
Well, what can I do about it? I mean, I couldn't possibly get a divorce from him.
Why not?
Well, how? Charge myself with infidelity?
I see what you mean. There's absolutely nothing you can charge him with?
Nothing that wouldn't be outweighed by what he knows.
Then you intend going on living with him as his wife?
I'm afraid I have no other choice, John.
Where does that leave us, then?
Well, we'll just have to be extremely careful and wait. We'll just have to wait and hope that something will happen to change things.
Something to change things? Well, of course, there are ways a person can change things if he doesn't like them. There's murder, for instance, as a way of ridding oneself of an enemy. But neither John nor Evelyn would commit murder. Not so much that either was averse to a major crime per se, rather that each was smart enough to know that the chances were they'd be caught. No, neither would commit a major crime. Of course, if a minor crime would solve the problem, neither would be averse to that. But how could a minor crime achieve the desired results? How? A pattern of circumstance was being cut that would answer that question.
What time does the feature break?
In just 3 minutes.
Good. Three, please.
That will be 3:30 out of 5.
Come on, Marge. We only have to stand in line a minute. The feature will start any time now.
That woman, she's been killed. I saw the man who did it.
He jumped in the black sedan.
Oh, he looked right at me. I was close enough to touch him.
Yes, a strange circumstance. A murder in a theater lobby unconnected with the problems of Evelyn Wentley and John Hartford. Unconnected? Well, at the moment. But many people had seen the murderer. Excellent and corresponding descriptions came from a dozen different witnesses. The police had a good description, and they knew, too, that he'd driven off in a black sedan. From the descriptions, the police artist had drawn a portrait of the murderer. That picture appeared in every paper in town. Then...
Yes, ma'am. You say you have some information for me?
Yes, Inspector. I think I might.
About what? It's about that woman who was murdered at the Elite Theater.
Yes, go ahead.
I saw the picture you published in the paper, and I know a man who looks almost exactly like that. He works in my office building, and I think he drives a black car.
Do you know his name?
Yes, sir. His name is Albert Wentley.
Yes?
You Albert Wentley?
Yes.
Inspector Danaher, homicide. Will you come with me, please?
Homicide? Come with you? Why? What for?
Well, we'd like to have you pay a little visit down to headquarters. Want to ask a few questions.
Questions about what? See here.
If I were you, Wentley, I'd come along nicely. We might not be too gentle with a guy who's under suspicion of murder.
Look here, I'm guilty of no crime. You say you suspect me of a murder. Well, I've committed no murder.
We'll find out the truth about that.
That is the truth, I tell you.
We're not so interested in what you tell us as we are in what a few other people have to say.
Other people?
Yes. You see, several people witnessed this murder. They got a good look at the killer close up. Now, we're going to line you up with a bunch of other questionable characters and ask these witnesses if they can identify the murderer from among you.
All right, let's get on with it. I'm innocent. I have nothing to fear.
All right, you birds, stand up there in line and stand still. Okay, Raleigh, give them the lights. Now, you folks out here all saw the murder in the lobby of the Elite Theater. There in the lineup are 10 men. They're wearing numbers from 1 to 10. Take a good look, ladies and gentlemen, and if you see the face of the murderer, write down the number on the paper you've been given.
Okay, Inspector. The papers have been counted.
And?
8 of them marked number 4. 1 marked number 9, and 1 wasn't marked at all.
And who was number 4?
Albert Wentley.
I thought so. Bring him in.
Yeah. Albert Wentley, in here, please.
Well, Wentley, like to make it easy on yourself and confess?
I am not guilty of any crime, I tell you.
No? Well, 8 of the eyewitnesses picked you as the gunman.
But I'm not guilty, I tell you.
Well, maybe you're not. But you're going to have an awful good alibi to prove it. Okay, boys, take him down and book him for murder.
Book him for murder? Incredible. Yet a fact that couldn't be denied, no matter how ridiculous it seemed to Albert Wentley that anyone should suspect him of murder. And the cold iron bars that now separated him from society were ample proof of his present situation. Suspected of murder he was. 8 eyewitnesses to the shooting had identified him as the guilty man. Of course he was innocent. He hadn't been near the Elite Theater on the night in question. It was just one of those strange quirks of circumstance, his physical features bearing such a strong resemblance to the killer that 8 disinterested people were willing to swear that he was the man. Well, he didn't have too much to worry about. He had an ironclad alibi. All he needed now was a lawyer.
Hello, Wentley.
Oh, it's you.
Yeah, I just thought I'd drop around and see if you were ready to confess.
Why should I?
Save you a lot of trouble. Save the state a trial.
I don't think there will be any trial.
Oh, why?
Because I'm guilty of no crime. I have a perfect alibi. I can prove my innocence. And when I do, I have an idea. It's going to prove highly embarrassing to you and your department.
Don't embarrass easy, Wentley. Not half as easy as a guy does when he finds himself sitting in the hot seat.
I'm not worried about that. All I'm worried about is getting it through a lot of stupid heads around here that I am innocent. look, see here, Inspector. I have some knowledge of a man's rights. I know you've booked me for murder. But I also know that I have a right to legal counsel. I demand that I be allowed to contact my attorney.
Okay. I have no objection to that. I'm not worried. Even Portia couldn't get you out of this.
Yeah?
My name is Harry Blake.
Mine is O'Reilly. So what?
I've been retained as counsel for Albert Wentley.
Business with you must be pretty lousy.
Well, with as little of your levity as possible, I'd like to see my client.
Okay. Come on. Hey, Wentley, you got a visitor.
Oh, Harry, I'm glad you got here.
Let me know when you're finished. I'll let you come out.
Well, Albert, when you retained me as legal counsel 2 years ago, I never suspected I'd be defending you against a murder charge.
This is absurd, Harry. They've got some crazy idea that I killed some woman in the lobby of the Elite Theater.
Well, did you?
Oh, of course not.
Well, what's the story?
There isn't any story that I know anything about. 8 eyewitnesses identified me as the killer.
That's not a very good start.
But they're mistaken, Harry. I wasn't anywhere near the Elite Theater. I haven't been for a month.
Well, where were you at the time in question?
At home.
All evening?
Yes. I got home from the office around 6:30. I didn't leave home again until the next morning.
Can you prove it?
Certain. Evelyn was at home with me the whole time.
Yes?
Mrs. Wentley, well, I guess you don't remember me. I met you only once, I believe.
No, I'm sorry.
Well, I'm Harry Blake, Albert's attorney.
Yes?
Well, may I come in, please?
Certainly. So, what can I do for you?
Mrs. Wentley, don't you know what's happened to your husband?
Has something happened to Albert?
Well, weren't you at home when he left this morning?
Well, no, I went out early to do some shopping, and when I returned, he'd already left.
Yes, yes, but not voluntarily, Mrs. Wentley.
What?
He was arrested. He's now in jail charged with murder.
Murder? Albert? Oh, wait, that's impossible.
Well, that he committed murder, yes, but he is facing the charge. Now, he's innocent, of course, but we'll need your testimony to prove it. Now, here's the setup as far as we know it. So, that's the situation, Mrs. Wentley. Albert says he was at home with you all evening. I'm afraid he's going to have to stand trial, but with your testimony, I'm convinced we can clear him.
Well, how soon can I see Albert?
Well, anytime you wish.
Well, I'd like to see him right away. Can you meet me at the City Hall in 2 hours?
Oh, yes, yes. I'll make arrangements for your visit.
Let me speak to John Hartford, please. Hello, John? It's Evelyn. Now listen closely. I think we've got our break. Albert is in jail charged with murder. Yes, that's right. My testimony can clear him, but without it, he's cooked. Yes. Yes, Now look, I've got an idea. I'm going to go down to see him right away, and I think we can make a little deal with him. My testimony for my freedom. So what do you think about that? Well, I'm going to be seeing him in 2 hours. You have a better idea? Well, you want me to meet you first? Well, okay, I guess so. All right, darling, I'll see you in half an hour. John, over here.
Well, baby, it looks like old man Fate must have stepped in on our side.
Yes, I don't know the whole story, but it seems that they've charged Albert with murder. On the night in question, he says he was at home all evening with me, and I can clear him. That's what I was talking about over the phone. So we can trade him the truth for my freedom.
I told you on the phone, honey. I've got a better idea.
What?
Well, I don't have too much money, darling, and so far you've had a rotten deal from Albert. Well, now's your chance to get the payoff.
Meaning?
Suppose you don't clear him. He goes up for murder, and you get the money and the property. It'll be a cinch to get a divorce from a man convicted of murder. There's your grounds, and there's our fortune.
Oh, John, that's terrible. I mean, of course, Albert's been horrible to me, but
You aren't getting sorry for him, are you?
Well, no, I'm not sorry, but I just can't see letting him go up for a murder when he's innocent. But I can see making a deal with him. It would be my freedom for telling the truth, but
Does anyone else know the truth?
No.
Then there's not the slightest risk of perjury.
I know, but
Look, I'm not insisting, honey. Either way is fine with me. I just thought I'd suggest this other idea. You think it over, will you?
Okay, I'll think it over, but I don't have much time. I'm meeting Albert at the jail in an hour. I'm going to have an answer for him then.
Yes, she'd have to have an answer for him. And this was her chance to make it a good answer.
an answer for all the misery he'd made her live through, an answer to his evil idea of making her live on with him after he knew she didn't love him. Oh, an answer to his selfish and cruel scheme. Oh, yes, she'd have an answer for him, a good answer. However, it wouldn't be the answer John Hartford had suggested. That was too much even for Evelyn. After all, her main interest was her freedom. Well, she had the currency with which to bargain for that freedom.
Well, hello.
I'm Evelyn Wentley, and I'm here to see my husband. His attorney, Harry Blake, said that he'd made the arrangements.
Yes, he made them. I'll take you right in. Right through here, Mrs. Wentley. Okay, Mrs. Wentley. You got half an hour.
Thank you. Well, Albert, how nice meeting you here.
Yeah, I figured you'd look at it that way.
Well, but did you expect me to go into mourning?
No.
Tell me, Albert, just what did you expect?
A visit from you.
Oh, you're so sure of yourself.
No. No, of you.
Oh.
Look, Evelyn, I'm way ahead of you. Harry Blake told you that your testimony would clear me, didn't he?
He intimated something of the kind.
Yeah, well, I know when I'm backed into a corner. You're the only person who can clear me.
So?
This murder they're trying to pin on me was committed last Wednesday night.
Yes?
Well, you know I was home that night.
Oh, well, it's just so hard to remember exact dates or what happened on certain nights.
Look, you remember we stayed home purposely to hear the Crosby and Morgan shows.
Oh, yes, I do remember.
Yeah, I came home a little after 6. I didn't leave again until the next morning.
And that's what you want me to say?
Yes, it's the truth. I'm not asking you to lie.
And suppose that's what I do say?
Huh?
What are you going to do for me?
Oh, the squeeze, huh?
So do I get my divorce?
Look, all I'm interested in right now is getting out of this mess. Yes, just tell the truth when you're called as a witness and you get your divorce.
You just made yourself a deal.
A deal. Her freedom for the truth. The truth that would clear him of a murder charge of which he was innocent. Innocent? Of course. But without her true story, the testimony of those eyewitnesses would certainly seem sufficient proof beyond reasonable doubt that he was guilty. Well, he had Evelyn's promise of the truth. It was a long time sitting in that cell waiting for the trial. The long, arduous task of choosing a jury. Then the relentless presentation of the prosecution's case.
Miss Walker, you are employed as a cashier at the Elite Theater?
Yes.
And do you recognize the defendant?
I do.
Where did you see him before?
In the lobby of the Elite Theater on the night of the murder.
And what did you see him do?
Draw a gun and kill Thelma Manners.
And where were you on the night in question?
I was with my boyfriend at the Elite Theater.
Will you please tell the jury what you saw?
I saw the defendant, Albert Wentley, shoot a woman 3 times.
You're certain?
Absolutely. I'd recognize him anywhere. He looked right at me. He shot her, got in a black car, and drove away.
Thank you, ma'am. Your Honor, the state rests.
8 witnesses, all certain that they saw Albert murder a woman before their very eyes. 8 witnesses, pointing an accusing finger directly at him. They were sure he pulled the trigger, put their hands on the Bible and swore that's what they saw. But none of them knew Albert's face as well as Evelyn. Albert was confident that her testimony would be enough to carry the day. Especially once she revealed that she was filing for divorce, that she had no reason to lie for him. Albert's lawyer arose and addressed the jury.
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the prosecution has tried to prove Albert Wentley guilty of the murder of Thelma Manners. They have produced witnesses who identify Albert Wentley as the murderer. Ladies and gentlemen, the defense in this case will be brief and conclusive. We will call only 1 witness. The testimony of that witness will prove to you beyond the shadow of a doubt that Albert Wentley is innocent. Your Honor, the defense calls Evelyn Wentley, wife of the defendant. Mrs. Wentley, you are the wife of Albert Wentley, the defendant?
I am.
Do you recall the night in question?
I do.
How?
Well, it was the Wednesday night before Albert was arrested, and, well, I remember that because I stayed home on purpose to hear the Bing Crosby show.
And will you please tell us where your husband, the defendant, was on the night in question?
I haven't the slightest idea. He didn't come home that night.
It didn't come home. Why, she lied. Albert could hardly believe his ears. Didn't come home? Oh, but of course it was clear now. She tricked him, let him stake his whole defense on her story, then lied. Yes, she and John must have agreed. Letting him be convicted for murder would guarantee that he'd be out of the way. With the testimony of 8 eyewitnesses, there was little doubt about the outcome.
The jury finds the defendant guilty of murder in the first degree.
The courtroom was packed on the day when Albert Wentley was to have sentence passed upon him. Oh, yes, even John Hartford and Evelyn came to see him squirm, came to see the results of their lie, their perjury.
Albert Wentley, you have been found guilty of murder in the first degree. Have you anything to say before sentence is passed upon you?
I'm innocent.
You have been found guilty, and it is the judgment of this court that you shall pay your debt to society by being put to death in the electric chair.
Look out! Look out! Bailiff, he's grabbing your gun!
Yes, yes, I grabbed your gun. Don't anybody move. I've got a little chore to take care of. I should have done it long ago. I was afraid to then. But now I've got nothing to lose. If I'm going to die for a murder I didn't commit, I may as well add a couple more to the score. My wife and John Hartford. And now, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, a crime fits the punishment.
Such is the manner in which retribution paid its call into the lives of Evelyn Wentley and John Hartford. Their perjury backed a coward into a corner and gave him the courage to kill, the courage of a trapped animal. They made certain he had nothing to lose, and with nothing to lose, he took the revenge he'd always been afraid to claim before. Yes, their scheme gave Albert the courage to kill them. Strange are the forces of fate, certain the justice of destiny. All who yield to the voice of evil find, waiting in the end, retribution.
You have been listening to Operation Perjury, written by Dwight Houser for the ABC radio series Retribution, and originally broadcast on October 16, 1947. This American Radio Theater recreation starred Beverly Washburn as Evelyn and Ivan Curry as Albert, with David Maddox as John. John Greenway was the voice of Retribution. Also in our cast, you heard in order of appearance Deborah Pining, Rick Johnston, Susie Hutchison, Lee Delaney, Tom Reeser, Randy Larson, Lurlin Lahr, Aaron Hiles, and Stuart Talbert. Original music composed and performed by Chad Rinney. Live sound effects by Marilyn Wilt, Karen Lockwood, and Penny Swanberg. Additional production assistance by Pam Hungate. Sound engineering by Doug Collins. The program was directed by Joy Jackson. I'm your announcer, Randy White, who you also heard as the jury foreman, thanking you for listening and inviting you to join us again next time. This is ART, American Radio Theater.
Let's listen to some music from the days of old-time radio.
From the famous Panther Room of the Hotel Sherman in the heart of the Loop, Chicago, One Night Stand presents the music of Bob Chester and the orchestra.
Well, let's get out of the way here now. Think called Octave Jump. Yeah.
everybody. Octave Jump played by Bob Jest and the Banner. Here comes the sweetheart of the airways, Betty Bradley, and David Allen to sing for you, Swingin' on a Star.
Swing on a star, carry moonbeams home in a jar, and be better off than you are. Or would you rather be a mule?
A mule is an animal with long, funny ears. He kicks up at anything he hears. His back is brawny, but his brain is weak. He's just plain stupid with a stubborn streak. And by the way, if you hate to go to school, you may grow up to be a mule.
Oh, would you like to swing on a star, carry moonbeams home in a jar, and be better off than you are? Or would you rather be a pig?
A pig is an animal with dirt on his face. His feet are a terrible disgrace. He's got no manners when he eats his food. He's fat and lazy and extremely rude. And if you don't give a feather or a fig, you may grow up to be a pig.
Or would you like to swing on a star, carry moonbeams home in a jar, and be better off than you are? Or would you rather be a fish?
A fish can't do anything but swim in a brook, can't write his name or read a book. To fool other people is his only thought, and though he's slippery, he still gets caught. But then if that sort of life is what you wish, you might grow up to be a fish.
And all the monkeys aren't in the zoo. Nowadays you meet quite a few. So you see, it's all up to you. You could be better than you.
You could be swinging on a star.
Oh, that's awful nice teamwork, Betty Bradley and Dave Allen. Sounded very swell from here. And now Dave Allen comes back again, singing solo, I'm in love with someone. All right, Dave?
Thank you.
and pray the tide will turn for me. You see, I'm only human. Now how long can this go on? If I can't have
going, David Allen. Nice going. Swell to hear your voice in that kind of a tune. Well, here comes something kind of funny in radio parlance. Is your whiz or is your Wayne? It takes in the maestro Bob Chester and lovely Betty Bradley.
I got a gal who's always late.
That's me.
Every time we have a date, but I love her. Yes, I love her. I'm going to meet her at the gate.
Hi, gate.
And see if I can get it straight, because I want her.
So
I'll ask her, hey, is you is or is you ain't my baby?
I sure is.
The way you're acting lately makes me doubt.
Papa, don't doubt.
You're still my baby, baby.
Oh, baby.
Seems like that old flame has done gone out.
A woman is a creature who has always been strange.
Right.
Just when you think you found one, why she's gone and made a change.
Hey, is you is or is you ain't my baby?
Well, honey, seems like baby's found somebody new.
Or is my baby still my baby too?
Baby.
Well, honey, seems like baby's somebody new.
Is my baby still my baby too?
Oh, that was swell, Betty and Bob. Really swell. Is your wizard, ain't you, right? Really okay. Now here comes Mrs. Alan Jung's son, David, to sing for you, 10 Days with Baby.
Mm-hmm.
10 days with baby. I'm gonna have 10 days with baby. I wouldn't trade my 10-day leave for any amount. And believe me, you will make every moment count. 10 days of loving, I'm gonna get 10 days of loving. And if it's up to me, she'll be too busy to cry. From the time I say hello till I say goodbye. Oh, I got me a GI haircut and a pocket full of pay. Bought her a gift, now I'm gonna get a lift. And I'll be on my way to 10 days of kissing. The kind of kissing I've been missing. I'm gonna make it last for heaven knows when. I'll have 10 days with baby again.
Dave Allen singing for you, 10 Days with Baby, getting a nice hand here in the Hotel Sherman, the College Inn. That's a good old home of swing in Chicago. Here comes Speak Low Now with Bob Chester and the band.
Bye.
now let's impound the talents of lovely Betty Bradley along with Maestro Bob Jester. Straighten up and fly right's the number.
Like a lie.
Straighten up and fly right.
Straighten up and
stay right. Straighten up and fly right.
Cool down, Papa, don't you blow your top.
Straighten up everybody around here, or she's the gal that'll make you do it. Something along the romantic side now as David Allen takes over with the vocal spotlight, A Fellow on a Furlough.
Thank you.
just a fellow, and a fellow out looking for a dream. The world's in his dreams every night. A lonesome fellow. Somebody who will be guiding light. Oh, pretty lady, you can say, beautiful lady. Just a fellow on a furlough whose hopes have all been true. The girl in his furlough dream is you.
Very nicely done, Dave. The time's wasting, so let's get into Blue Skies and let Bob Jester take it. Yeah, yeah.
Bob Jester and his orchestra on One Night Stand, coming to you from the Panther Room of the Hotel Sherman in the heart of the Loop, Chicago. This is the Armed Forces Radio Service.
Gee, that's all the time I've got for today. Please stop by our website, AmericanRadioTheater.org, for more of our podcasts. We put up a new one every month. Hey, see you next time.